well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. Well, this is a critically important week for the right to keep and bear arms. So we've got the Supreme Court, which is set to consider several Second Amendment cases in conference on Thursday. We won't hear any results from that conference until next week, next Monday morning. The Supreme Court is expected to release any orders coming from this week's conference. Next Monday is also going to be when the NRA Board of Directors meets again. You've got the NRA annual meeting coming up starting on, well, I guess officially it kicks off on Friday. But there'll be a lot of events in Dallas on Thursday. This is going to be a critically important meeting for the NRA as well. I expect we're going to see a lot of fireworks at the members' meeting on Saturday, continuing on through the Board of Directors meeting on Monday. You know, we had that slate of reform candidates who were elected to the NRA's Board of Directors. You'll have the election of the 76th board member, which will take place at the annual meeting. And again, this annual meeting is going to really chart the future course of the NRA for the foreseeable future. So we'll be talking more about that later on in the week, but I want to talk about what's going on at the Supreme Court. You know, a couple of the cases we've already discussed, right? So two of the cases that the Supreme Court's going to be considering on Thursday involve challenges to existing bans on so-called assault weapons. You've got a number of cases that have sort of been consolidated in Illinois, taking on the Protect Illinois Communities Act, which bans not only so-called assault weapons, but also bans so-called large-capacity magazines, any ammunition magazine that can hold more than 10 rounds. You've also got Bianchi versus Brown, which is the challenge to Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. This is a case that had previously been up before the Supreme Court. It was pending review when the Bruin decision was handed down almost 2 years ago now. And it was one of the cases that the court GVR'd. So they granted cert, they vacated the lower court decision, which had upheld Maryland's ban, and sent the case back down for further review. A three-judge panel on the Fourth Circuit decided, you know what, we don't need to kick this case all the way back down to the lower court. Actually, we don't know. They could have actually been leaning in that direction, but we don't know because the three-judge panel that heard the case after Bruin never got a chance to issue its decision. More than a year went by after oral arguments were held. We were expecting a decision at any point, and then all of a sudden the Fourth Circuit decided, you know what, we're going to take this case en banc. So forget everything that the three-judge panel has done. We're going to go ahead and take it before the entire Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, along with another case out of West Virginia, not dealing with so-called assault weapons bans. It was an extraordinary step for the Fourth Circuit to take, which is why the plaintiffs in this case are asking the Supreme Court to weigh in now. Now, beyond the two cases dealing with so-called assault weapons bans, there is a third case that the court will be considered in conference. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention. It may be because it's more of a long shot than the other two cases. I don't know why we haven't been talking as much about this third case, but it has also been distributed for the justices to consider on Thursday. It is a case called Srower versus NYC. And it involves a challenge to the good moral character clause that is still in place in New York City when it comes to possessing a rifle or a shotgun. Now, you also still have that good moral character clause when it comes to possessing a handgun or getting a handgun license. But Srower versus the NYC particularly challenges the statute as it applies to licenses for long guns. As attorney Amy Bellantoni writes, in her petition to the court, respondents New York City, New York, and New York City Police Commissioner Edward Caban impose a discretionary licensing scheme over the lawful possession of rifles and shotguns, which, among other burdens, requires applicants prove their, quote, good moral character before they can exercise the right to possess long guns. Mr. Srower has no disqualifiers under federal or state law to firearms possession, yet he was denied the right to possess rifles and shotguns because New York City Administrative Code 10-303, subsection A, subsection 2, imbues limitless discretion and the police commissioner to render moral character judgments to decide who is sufficiently worthy to exercise this right. Bellatoni writes, if the applicant lived outside of New York City, there would be no barrier to his lawful possession of rifles and shotguns. If he were a resident of a county outside of the five boroughs, he could readily purchase and possess a rifle or shotgun from an FFL after submitting to a federal background check through the NICS system, which he would pass. Now, Bellantoni notes that the district court found in favor of her client, writing in a tempered and well-reasoned 48-page opinion, the district court held that the New York City Administrative Code in question, good moral character and good cause to deny, were facially unconstitutional, meaning that they weren't just unconstitutional as it applies to Mr. Schrauer. They are unconstitutional as it applies to every applicant. The judge also found that the police commissioner's policies for reaching a moral character determination likewise violated the Second and 14th Amendments. The judge's decision said in part the fatal problem with the subsections of New York City Administrative Code and the former versions of this code continues to be in the broad discretion afforded to city officials in determining whether someone may exercise their Second Amendment right. The judge went on to say defendants have not identified any historical analog for investing officials with the broad discretion to restrict someone's Second Amendment right based on determining the person to, quote, lack good moral character or for a vague and undefined notion of good cause. Bellantoni told the Supreme Court the district court concluded that the statute, quote, suffers, or the statutes rather, quote, suffer from the very same constitutional flaws under Bruin, observing that Section 10-303 fails to define good moral character in further detail. The court held that, quote, without doubt, the very notions of good moral character and good cause are inherently exceedingly broad and discretionary. Someone may be deemed to have good moral character by one person, yet a very morally flawed character by another. Such unfettered discretion is hard, if not impossible, to reconcile with Bruin. So far, so good, right? Well, the City of New York appealed to the Second Circuit, and the Second Circuit granted a stay of the judge's decision. So, as for now, this good moral character clause still exists in New York City, and if you want to have a rifle or a shotgun in your home, then you have to convince the licensing authorities that you possess good moral character, however broadly defined that is, right? So maybe you got a parking ticket. Maybe you got a traffic ticket. Maybe you've been arrested but not convicted. Maybe you've been a person of interest but never even officially considered a suspect in a crime. Maybe you don't have any of those. Maybe the licensing authority, you just rubbed that individual the wrong way, right? For whatever reason or for no reason whatsoever, you can still be denied the ability to keep a firearm in your home for self-defense based on this incredibly vague standard. Now, one of the reasons why this may be a long shot for the Supreme Court is that, like the Illinois and Maryland cases, this is a request for the Supreme Court to intervene before a trial on the merits has taken place. This is still going through, at least of the appellate process, right? This is still going through the appeals process. And it may be that the court says, well, you know what? This isn't quite ripe for review. We've seen that before with other challenges to post-Bruin New York laws. Actually seen that before in the Protect Illinois Communities Act. There was a previous attempt to get the court to intervene. The court declined to do so. But I think the expectation now is with the gun ban cases that the rationale used by the Seventh Circuit, that AR-15s are not protected arms covered by the Second Amendment, and the shenanigans that the Fourth Circuit have played to avoid a good decision that would contradict what the Seventh Circuit has held in an attempt to forego a circuit split, right, and to try to play keep away from the court, that maybe the games that are being played here have attracted enough attention at SCOTUS that you can get four justices to say, all right, listen, we got to step in and stop the abuse. We can let this drag out for another year or two before this case reaches us in the course of normal events. But again, what is the damage that's being done here in the meantime, not only by the law itself, but again, by the lower courts who are flagrantly misreading or just ignoring what the Supreme Court had to say in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. In fact, in her petition to the Supreme Court, Bellantoni says that the Second Circuit order that stayed the district court's permanent injunction of this good moral character code was not based on a careful review and a meaningful decision. She says the court claimed to have been given or to have gave due consideration to the factors that were outlined, but she says the order offers no discussion or analysis for its decision whatsoever. Instead, it simply cites Antoniuk, which is the challenge to many of the state of New York's post-Bruin carry restrictions, both in terms of the licensing and in terms of sensitive places. Bellantoni says, had due consideration been given, the Second Circuit would have realized that Antoniuk, A, is not binding on the appeal, as it involved a review of a preliminary injunction, not a merits-based determination. So that, too, again, still in its preliminary stages. And two, its moral character analysis is confined to handgun licensing, because this was a challenge to the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, not a challenge to the statute regarding long guns, which she says the moral character statute for handguns is, quote, markedly narrower than the New York City code that affords broad discretion when determining whether someone has the good moral character to possess a license for a rifle or a shotgun. She says as well, any amount of discretion conflicts with the plain text of the Second Amendment and contains no analysis of this nation's historical traditions of regulating rifles and shotguns, which is decidedly sparse. She said, in fact, to be sure, when it comes to long guns, even the New York State Legislature acknowledged in 1965 that there was no, quote, national tradition of licensing rifles and shotguns, never mind disarming the entire citizenry until a government official appears or feels like they possess good moral character. So she argues that the time is ripe for the Supreme Court to step in here, that the Bruin decision is being roundly ignored once again by the Second Circuit, that the district court found that there was no historical tradition for this type of licensing law, and that the law itself is so broad that it provides unconstitutional deference to these licensing authorities. So what are the odds that the Supreme Court might take all three of these cases? I honestly, I have no idea. I don't think anybody does. We can make an educated guess. But I don't even know how educated that guess might be. You know, if the Supreme Court agrees to hear one or both of the gun ban cases, I would say it increases the chances that they would go ahead and hear this dispute over the good moral character clause in New York. But the two cases are not, or the three cases rather, are not substantially similar. And so it is possible that the Supreme Court will say, yeah, you know what, we got to take care of this this gun ban issue while leaving the licensing issue to percolate at the lower court level. It could also be that the court says, you know, enough is enough of these lower court abuses. We are tired of these appeals courts, again, continuing to ignore what we said in Bruin. We're going to put the hammer down. Not only when it comes to the Seventh Circuit and the Fourth Circuit, but to the Second Circuit as well. And we're going to grant cert to all three of these cases. Ideally, that would be great, right? That would be the outcome that I'm hoping for. Again, I don't know how realistic it is. And it could very well be, by the way, that Monday comes and we don't hear about any of these cases. You know, I want to caution folks, don't get your hopes up that we're going to get a quick resolution. Even in terms of knowing whether the Supreme Court is going to accept one of these cases, it is entirely possible that one or more of these cases will be held in conference for multiple weeks before we actually learn what the court will do with this case, with either any of these cases, I should say. That's what happened with Heller. It took, I believe, three separate conferences before Heller was officially granted cert by the Supreme Court. These aren't going to be the only cases that are debated and discussed in conference. So if there is a question, if there's not a resolution, if somebody wants a little bit more time to consider the issues, they'll kick the case back to the next conference and they'll take it up again. The Supreme Court does not have a deadline as to when it has to decide whether or not to grant cert in any of these cases. It's on the court schedule. So it could very well be The next Monday rolls around, the orders come out, and we don't see any of these cases listed, either rejected or granted cert. And so I want to prepare you for that possibility. I hope, again, that this is a pretty quick decision from the Supreme Court and one that's decided in gun owners' favor, but it might not work out that way. We will definitely be keeping our eyes on things. We're going to be talking more, by the way, about those gun ban cases later on in the week here at Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Also, we'll be talking more about the NRA annual meeting coming up later this week on Cam and Company as well. Right now, though, before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. Now, this free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text the word IDEAS, I-D-E-A-S, to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, turning now to our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of North Carolina where a High Point man arrested and charged with shooting a vehicle while he was already on probation. Yep. It was back on May the 3rd, about 2:15 in the afternoon. Officers in High Point, North Carolina, called out on a report of a shooting. The victim, a 19-year-old man, told officers that someone had shot at the vehicle. Victim, thankfully, not injured. Last Thursday, detectives with the High Point Police Department Street Crimes Unit arrested Lorenzo Aguilar, who is 21 years of age, charged with three counts of assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, as well as two counts of discharging a firearm into occupied property. He is, at last report, being held in the Guilford County Jail under a no bond. According to WXII in Greensboro, North Carolina, Aguilar, at the time of his arrest, was on probation for crimes committed in another jurisdiction, including assault, inflicting serious bodily injury, as well as speeding to elude arrest. Now, I mentioned that Aguilar is just 21 years of age. I've not been able to determine when those previous charges occurred and when the guilty plea or conviction took place. But again, those are pretty serious crimes, right? Assault, inflicting serious bodily injury in particular. And yet it doesn't sound like Mr. Aguilar received much, if any, prison time for those crimes. So he's placed on probation and again, now accused of even more serious offenses. Whereas if he had been sentenced to some time behind bars for that first crime, well, he might not have been out on the street to allegedly commit the second offense. But maybe he would have understood that, oh, actions do come with consequences here in the legal system. Today's armed citizen story from San Antonio. And this is an interesting one. Police have released two men after they determined that a shooting was in self-defense after all. Now, it took a little bit of investigating here to reach that conclusion. According to News 4 San Antonio, it was on Saturday afternoon around 1:30. Officers responded to reports of a shooting at the intersection of Roosevelt and Kirkpatrick. When they got there, there was a 55-year-old man who told officers that he was approached by, well, I don't know if he said he was 26 years old, but he was approached by two other individuals who fired multiple gunshots at him. 55-year-old thankfully wasn't injured in this. Officers said they located evidence of a crime scene at the location, including spent shell casings. 26-year-old man and the other individual were arrested a short distance away after they were identified by the 55-year-old. But during the investigation, police discovered that the supposed victim in this case was actually the aggressor. It was determined that the 55-year-old had attacked the 26-year-old and another person with a crowbar. And that is when the 26-year-old drew a firearm, fired off at least one shot, not as an aggressor, but to stop the attack against himself. News 4 San Antonio reports the conclusion was reached after the 55-year-old was initially released under the belief that he was the victim. The firearm used in the incident has been collected as evidence, and both men who were originally suspects in this case have now been released. The 55-year-old, I don't know if the 55-year-old was actually taken into custody yet, or if he is still outstanding. Hopefully the armed citizen gets his gun back. Because, you know, you shouldn't be disarmed for long. I understand, you know, it's the course of the investigation. We actually had a story over the weekend about a similar incident in Indiana where a local gun store actually gave a free gun to the armed citizen who was forced to relinquish his firearm to police during the course of this criminal investigation. Don't know that we're going to see that there in San Antonio, but hopefully a quick resolution and this armed citizen gets his gun back before long, thankfully not facing any charges any longer since police determined that, no, he actually was acting in self-defense. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, we're unable to do the right thing. We'll go back to North Carolina for this story, the Raleigh area, where a good Samaritan able to help a driver escape their car, which had been pinned on railroad tracks just a few moments before a train came barreling down those tracks and actually destroyed the vehicle. This was last Wednesday. Jacob Wonder said, we could hear the train blazing its horn, and as it's coming down, the people are just running, and we watched the train hit this car. So he and his coworkers saw the aftermath of this. They didn't realize at the moment that the car was unoccupied. Thanks to the efforts of a gentleman named Aziz Habtis, who was passing by, saw that the car was stuck. He said he first tried to push the car off the tracks with his own car, and then he realized, man, we don't have time for this. So he started screaming for the driver to get out. Habtis said, I told him, get out, just get out of the car. And as soon as he got out of the car, the train crashed. He said, I literally saw the car just flying in front of my head. According to Amtrak, train traveling from a rally to Charlotte, there were 92 people on board. Another car was actually hit during the incident as well. Habtis's car sustained damage. He says he thinks it was hit by flying debris from the other vehicle. As the train was stopped on the tracks, investigators were doing some work. Jacob Wonder and his coworkers ended up bringing water for first responders and a service dog in training to comfort those on scene, including Habtis's young children. Habtis says he was shaken up. But he says he was also glad he got the chance to help save a life. He said, if we weren't there, that guy, he'd be killed by now. Thank God. We've got to help each other. Well, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Aziz Habtis there in Raleigh, North Carolina, definitely, definitely doing the right thing and earning a big tip of the hat. Thank you for your very good deed, sir. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day for the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. All you have to do, use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on all of our stories at Bearing Arms. But you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that is crucially important in these days of big tech censorship and anti-gun activism on the part of far too many mainstream media organizations. So thank you again for your support. It truly is appreciated. We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.